Hi, you're listening to Great Thinking, Ideas and Conversations from Greenbelt. We're Greenbelt. We're somewhere to believe in.
Oh, well done, Sebastian. Okay, hello Greenbelters. Welcome to The Exchange. The Exchange is all about business for the common good. Is that better? This venue is sponsored by the Cooperative Tradecraft, Church Missionary Society, Anthony Collins Solicitors, and Resonance. So thank you for coming. This session is called A Drop in the Ocean. It's been organized by Resonance, a company that believes that your money can do more than just make a difference, than just make a profit. It can actually be used to make a difference in the world. We're going to hear from three pioneers in the social impact for social benefit space, Sebastian Parsons, Carmen, and Daniel Brewer. So first of all, you guys have been really leading in this space for a long time. Can you just tell us a little bit about your project and how you got started?
Yes, certainly. How long would you like me to talk for?
Just 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay, so Stockwood is basically a farm. Farming is very difficult to make money. We, as a family, have been farmers since my grandfather in about 1935 or something like that. And in the 1980s, my grandfather, who was a very forward-thinking man, a very interesting man, but nevertheless a man of his times, failed to realise that the child that would take his farm forward was his daughter. And so the farm was sold. That was when I was a teenager, and my sisters and I were quietly upset about that. Later on, we actually had our own business and made a success. So we ended up in a situation where we had enough success to buy our own farm. Now, we turned out we'd always thought we'd buy our grandfather's farm back, but that wasn't for sale. But we were working on a business park that was in the middle of rural Worcestershire, and we decided we'd buy the farm where that business park was. It came up for sale, and within a couple of years of having bought that farm, my mum was farming it. She had achieved the goal that she had always had of making the best of the land using the biodynamic method. However, we realised, my sisters and I, that if the situation that we had witnessed as children was not to be repeated, we needed to do something differently with our new family farm. If we didn't, then either we or our children would fall out and the farm would end up being sold. And I came across the idea of the Community Benefit Society and introduced that to the family. And we recognised that by owning the farm in the community with the purpose of being farmed biodynamically for all time, we would solve the family crisis of what to do with the money, because we would release the value of the asset but carry on farming it. And then that asset would then be owned by the community, and we would be doing what that community wanted us to do. So that's the beginning of Stock Community Benefit Society, and that's when I met Daniel. And I think it was Junction 13, the little chef, where we planned out our campaign on a napkin. Neither of us smoking. We used a napkin. And delivered that vision over the next 2 years, and Stockwood is 181 acres, beef, lamb, and there's 20 acres of woodland. There's a business park with 30 units, around 100 people have employment. And the Community Benefit Society has got 400 members who've invested a total of 1.4 million. Now, the capital value of the business park and the farm is greater than that, and the balance is a mixture of different loans. Some of those are smaller, and we've got a large mortgage from CAF Bank. So we've got a community of members, we've got a regular newsletter every week, Farmer Adrian's blog, And we're hoping that the Stockwell model can inspire similar projects to emerge over the coming years.
Thank you. And Tom?
I should say that StockGrid is one of my favourite projects in the UK. It's fantastic. And if you're ever lucky enough to be good friends with Sebastian, he does an excellent quad bike tour on the farm, which is very bumpy and very cool. So, excellent. Anyway, I'm not a farmer myself. We use a few less quad bikes in my role. I'm based at Ethics, and Ethics is a positive investing platform. So we help people to invest their money into businesses, specifically businesses that do good stuff, though. So Stock Community Benefit Society has listed on Ethics, as has Mustard Seed, which we're going to hear about in a little bit. In terms of the story of Ethics, though, Ethics was founded about 7 or 8 years ago by a gent called Jamie Hartzell. Jamie Hartzell founded if you ever meet Jamie, he calls himself a serial social entrepreneur, and has set up a number of social enterprises and ventures. The main one he's famously known for is Ethical Property Company, which has a number of business and retail business outlets around the country where you can rent office space from them if you are a social enterprise. And Jamie, a number of years ago, recognised that there were a number of sort of advanced and quite developed ethical businesses around the UK that you couldn't necessarily trade your stocks and shares and securities in. So he gathered together a few of them, including Tradecraft, who are here today, Ethical Property Company, Cafe Direct, you may be familiar with. And Ethics was founded to essentially facilitate the trading of stocks and shares in some of these very, very developed ethical enterprises. Since then, a number of financial services have developed because the whole idea of Ethics is to enable and make money do good. The trading of stocks and shares in ethical companies is good things, but there's still other ways to enable that to happen. And what we mostly do now is list investment raises on Ethics. We've helped around 70 to 80 different social enterprises collectively raise £70 million from around 15,000 different investors. That's taken a bit of time, but that's where we are today, really. And that's how Ethics has come to be where we are at.
That's amazing. I mean, £70 million with 15,000 members. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good. The average investment size is about 4,000 to 4,500. So, yeah, it's very good.
That's great. Okay, and Daniel, you're the founder of Resonance, but you're here with your Mustard Seed hat on today.
Yes, thank you. So my journey into this space started about 25 years ago when I was working in the food industry and noticed a disconnect between shareholders and owners of businesses and the business operators. And it seeded something in me to see whether we could find a way to connect shareholders and owners of capital with entrepreneurs and business leaders. That was the start of Resonance, and there's going to be more of that story on Monday if you want to come back. But I'm here, as Shannon said, with I'm a director of a little Cornish community benefit society called Mustard Seed Property, which I helped set up with a friend of mine called Derek Thomas, who himself is a social entrepreneur, but now the MP for St Ives and the Isles of Scilly. But when he was the chief exec of Mustard Seed, he approached me and said, look, we've got a problem because Cornwall is an amazing place with incredible beauty and great assets. But it also has a plethora of different social challenges. Because it's a great place to retire, it has a whole bunch of social care issues that need catering for. For some reason, it has a disproportionate number of people with learning disability that again needs some support. And because it's full of coastal towns, it also has a large homelessness problem. And he said, actually, his personal story, which is relevant, is that his brother-in-law was one of the residents of Bewdock Hospital, And I don't know if any of you remember, 20 years ago, Budok Hospital had a bit of a scandal and was shut by the NHS because of an amount of abuse that was going on. And more recently, there was another private hospital that was shut for similar reasons, where people with learning disability were effectively being institutionalised rather than provided with support. And it was impossible, or it seemed impossible, to give them the right level of support. So the government shut these institutions. But where were these people who were adults? They weren't ill. They had learning disability. They needed support to live in their own homes. And Derek said, look, we've got to find new homes for quite a lot of people. And the government's just shutting this and going, right, you know, the hospital was bad, we acknowledge that, but didn't provide an alternative solution. And rather than just go, oh, let's lobby the council to do something, or let's go and find some large housing associations to do it, he said, why don't we do it for ourselves? Why don't we, as the Cornish community, go and buy some properties, find some operational charities and social enterprises that can run these properties and support the individuals, and unlock both our cumulative wealth, however small it might be. Let's see what we can do together that we wouldn't be able to do on our own. And that was back in 2007. We raised £150,000 from 25 people, borrowed some money from Triodos Bank, bought one house, changed five families' lives. Actually, it got written up as a case study by the Cabinet Office in 2008. And at that moment, I thought, oh, this is interesting. I thought this was just a little project down in Cornwall, but this was being championed nationally. And about that same time, we started to see a real shift. Okay, the banking crisis had hit. People are suddenly worried about what to do with their money, looking for instruments that they could invest in that would be both positive and able to make a financial return. And we were part of a wave that is continuing, where communities, effectively cooperatives, were setting themselves up to buy assets, might be a pub or a shop or a renewable energy scheme. And it went from somewhere in the 90s, there were about four or five a year of these, and now there's more like 50 to 100 of these community share offers that are happening each year. But the legislation goes back to the 1850s, and a small group of Christian socialists coming out of the cooperative movement actually campaigned to get this legal structure set up. And it's the only legal structure in the UK where you can do a public share offer with exemptions under the Financial Services and Markets Act to allow ordinary people to invest in. And as a financial professional, one of the things that really frustrates me is that mostly I am told to protect people from themselves when it comes to making investments. So we've got some phrases like, are you a high net worth individual? Are you a sophisticated investor? And I'm affronted by the fact that I need to ask these questions, but I'm told I have to because of the mis-selling that goes on to retail. So for me, this all of these stories that we're hearing and the platform that Ethex is offering is a really powerful tool at mobilizing individuals to be able to put their money as little as £100 into some project. I think £100 is the minimum investment in Stockwood, £250 is the minimum in Mustard Seed Property, and that's broadly similar across a number of different things on Ethex. So we're here to unpack some of these stories, I guess, but that's where we're at.
No, thank you. I mean, you're all doing such incredible work, and when I hear it, I hear, wow, even I, as a non-high net worth individual, can actually make a difference. I can start with what I have, £100, make a huge difference. And Daniel, you said, it's like, what can we do together that we can't do alone? Like, it's actually these new models that are actually creating the world we want to live in, right? And it's making our neighborhoods different. I'd love to hear some of the stories from, like, you told a little bit more about Cornwall, but like for the farm, what's it like to open up your farm and for people to come on? And why do you believe in farming in this way that's different than what your grandfather was doing?
I think that the most important thing is that we make a difference. So it's self-empowerment, choosing out of your own desire to see a better world, something to do. And Stockwood is... it's economy, ecology, it's changing the world in a number of different ways. What's it like as a farm? Well, farming is an insular life. And so having a community benefit society as the owner of the farm means that you do see a lot more people than you would normally. We have, when we have a summer fair or a Christmas fair, we have maybe 1,000 people come through the farm, but we have people at other times as well, children and on school trips and things like that. So we reach out to the community in as many ways as we can to introduce them. And we hope in, we've just got a new director who's got expertise in learning on the land, and we hope to have a project in the next 2 years which will allow people challenged at school, excluded from school, access to land-based education at Stockwood.
That's great. I mean, the other thing that strikes me both with Stockwood and with Mustard Seed is these are very localized projects, right? It's in the community owns that project. But how transferable do you think your models are, and how big is your inspiration to like see these models move across the country? I mean, do you want to just carry on, Sebastian, and then switch to Daniel?
Absolutely on fire to make this model grow, replicate. It changes the lives of everybody that's involved, whether that's the investors or the farmers. Having a meaningful connection to your money, so your money is making a difference in the world, is active in the world, and you can go to the place. So, for instance, our AGM 2018, we had 10% of our members attend, which is a very high proportion, and it's the interest that's generated from the weekly blog about farming life. And if you've ever read it, you'll know it's about more than farming life, because my father's quite an eccentric and it goes quite deeply into politics, philosophy and the history of cricket. So the question is how do we replicate? And of course that's something that we're working, Resonance is working with, and Ethics. And Ethics have been great partners for Stockwood in putting our proposition out in the world where people can see it, which of course is the biggest challenge. How do we become visible? With Stockwood, we were lucky. We've got a connection with the Archers, because the man who created the Archers actually was a friend of the family that used to own Stockwood. And so we got ourselves onto the BBC, which helped a lot in the early days. But that makes me think that Stockwood is definitely a model. You know, we wouldn't have that opportunity of grabbing attention if we weren't meant to make more of them happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things just on Stockwood that I love, and I think David, he's gone now, David from Anthony Collins said earlier today, which was ownership is really important and it can make a difference. Not that one type of ownership is different, but here you've got an example where the farm effectively and the business park were biodynamically organically farmed before and biodynamically and organically farmed afterwards. But the key difference when you look at it is that there's 3,500 people who are now experiencing what good land management is like now, where they didn't have access to it before. And it's opened up a whole load of conversations. And that 400 or 500 people all feel like they own a little bit of it. And guess what? They're getting a 5% return on their money. So people putting in a little bit and getting a little bit out. And now we're exploring, looking at doing a bond so that there's an ISA, so that people can get actually tax-free income from it. So really, I think, Sebastian, right, both of us, is that we're trying to, as much as we love and need the banks to help, but we'd love it if there was no bank debt in this at all. We're much more sustainable if we're owned by thousands of individuals all putting a little bit of savings in. But for Mustard Seed Property, we're a one property business at the moment. We've just raised another £340,000 from 75 people to buy the next property. We're addressing issues around homelessness, around domestic violence, around learning disability, and of course actually we're not, I say that we're delivering it, we're not delivering it, we're actually creating space so that really quite small charities and social enterprises can expand their operations, their impact, but also because they are managing the properties, they're increasing their income, so we're actually making them financially stronger as well by being patient good landlords where we customize the properties to their need. And with my resonance hat on, we're investing in social enterprises all around the country, and often we're lending money because that's either all we can do or what the social enterprises want. And one of the worries I sometimes wrestle with is how much debt is good for organizations. Do we sometimes make them weaker by loading them up with debt with great ambitions? And it's fine when it works, but when it doesn't work, it's really, really painful. And property is fine. You know, you borrow money to buy property, and it's understandable. But wouldn't it be good if there was a way of introducing some patient equity that didn't want masses of upside, and the upside was captured for the community, but it didn't overburden the organizations themselves, that just needed access to fit-for-purpose property that was affordable for their business model, and they had security of tenure so that they could promise to their tenants and their clients and the people that they support a safe place for them to flourish. And that, for me, is what Mustard Seed Property does, is it stands there as a volunteer-run property company that all it does is buy properties for other people. And we go around these charities and social enterprises and say, so which property would you like? How can we make it better for you? And I know we could put solar panels on this property because that will make your bills cheaper. And we keep going through those conversations. And then I see, well, actually, we're doing this in Cornwall. Why aren't we doing this in every place where we're lending money? And we do a lot of work in Bristol. And there are a couple of organizations in Bristol who are owning properties, and they've just shouldn't be owning them, and they want to get rid of them, but they want to stay in them. We're like, well, we need a Mustard Seed Property that can do a sale and lease back, buy these properties and hold them in, you know, steward them for all of Bristol, not just that particular organization that's doing it at the moment. Do what Sebastian's family did, which is see ahead and go, actually, before it becomes a problem, let's get these assets and make sure that they're owned for the benefit of all, not just for one organization or one person. So I think it's a model that can grow massively, but it does need lots and lots and lots of ordinary people. We've got 75 members, you've got 400 members. FX is our platform, 14,000?
Yeah, 14,000 to 15,000 now. Yeah, it's good.
We need 1.5 million on FX. Yeah,
we do. And I think that's, I just want to say, because, I mean, really, both Stockwood and Mustard Seed have been made possible from FX, right?
Yes. Well, I say yes and no. I mean, FX amplifies the investment opportunities of some incredibly incredible businesses. Mustard Seed and Stockwood being part of them. We're a platform, and anybody in this room can sign up and be an FX user, and you can invest through it. But actually, it's the individuals themselves who are actually directly investing in some of these incredible businesses that are making a difference. You know, we've got a small role to play, and it's nice that we can be part of it. But actually, the thing that makes a difference is transferring money into the bank accounts of the likes of Stockwood, Mustard Seed, and anybody else who's on the platform.
Yeah. And I think it's really, FX is about investment, right? Like, that's what we're talking about. This isn't about gift. There's a lot of platforms to raise money and donations, but this is about investment. And how are you seeing the landscape change, and how are you seeing it impact small companies that are coming on saying, I'm really doing good and this is going to help me do more good?
Yeah, you're right. We're within a crowd approach. There's loads of different approaches you can use. You can use a donations approach. You know, I as a member of the crowd can give money without expecting anything back. You can use a rewards approach where I might get a free t-shirt or a mug or something in return. Or you can go for the investment approach, which is where FX is focused. And the idea of FX is that, you know, if you invest, there is the potential to get your money back and a little bit of a reward on top of that as well. In terms of the how it's changing, I think Daniel's right. The Rochdale pioneers, in the 1840s, they did some incredible work getting that legislation in place, and the co-op movement's been developing ever since. The more contemporary side of things, there's 400 cooperatively owned village shops in the UK now. There's pubs are about 50 at the moment. Where we've seen incredible movements on FX is in the renewable energy space as well. So around 50 million of that 70 that I spoke about has been into renewable energy co-ops. I think farming is probably the next big thing to make a difference, and where investment might be going. Similarly with housing as well. I think community-led approaches to housing and community land trusts are also a really exciting area.
And that's great. What we're really talking about here is we can own this. We can own our own solutions to change our neighborhoods and our cities, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's a virtuous circle. So people who have got the spare money usually need it to make some money for them. And so they need to invest it where there will be a return. So this is about changing the world, not through generosity by giving, but through wise investment in the long term.
Now, I love that when you're talking about the circular economy, right? That's what we're seeing more and more of, is that's what's got to change. The money's got to flow around more.
Yeah, if we could convince enough people of this and get into a conversation with some pension funds, then we're talking about multiplying what we're doing by 10 overnight. We're really at the very beginning of showing the way to do something which puts people in, it gives people, where people take responsibility for not only their own lives but the lives of the community they're in.
No, absolutely. And I think, I mean, I don't know what you guys are thinking out there, but I think if I can make a 5.5% return and do good with it, why in the world would I put it in a, you know, in something that I have no idea what it's doing and is probably doing bad, right?
Right. Why be indifferent about what your money can do if you can be intentional about it? But I do think it is a journey. You know, we when we're advising all of our social enterprises, we say, look, if you want the right investors to join your journey and buy into your values, you are going to have to start by articulating what your values are. You are going to have to get better at measuring your social impact and telling the story so that people go, okay, yes, this is what you're about. There's no point complaining later on that the investors didn't buy into your values if you didn't tell them what they were in the first place. But there's also a journey for us as investors. And I've been in some fascinating conversations. I've got what I thought were three or four environmental investors together. And one of them says, look, we just need to put more solar panels on the roofs and we need to build more wind turbines and we need to just mobilize people to do this. And the next person says, no, that's such a dreadful idea. You can't possibly do that. What an awful message. What we need is to invest in the new technology that is going to enable us to do this so much better. And then the next person says, no, it's not about new energy creation. It's about behavior change. You've got to drive down energy use. And then somebody else, oh, no, this is all about biodiversity. Unless you get and think, okay, I thought this we had a common theme here. But actually, we all see the world differently. And that's okay. So get to know what you actually think, or what you really care about. You know, when I was first married and we had a young family, we were living in East London, and I remember filling in a form and it said, what's the most important issue for you? And I just put affordable housing, affordable housing, affordable housing. And then the next year I got access to a shared ownership house in London and it was fantastic. And some other form came through and, you know, it wasn't that again. You know, it wasn't that wasn't my big issue. And it's amazing how quickly either we forget what was our pertinent issue once it's been satisfied for us, and we have to remember that other people are not in that same place, actually we learn new things, or we get inspired by new stories, or we discover new truths, and we go, no, I want to put my energy and my effort into this thing. Now, we don't all have to be single issue, right? I'm going to go and be focused on learning disability or homelessness or farming. You know, we can have a portfolio approach to our impact as well. And I was really encouraged by Debbie, is it? Of the co-op, who was talking about, you've got to be careful. There is risk in over-focusing on a single issue, because, of course, everything has some collateral effect. But get to know what you're passionate about, and then look around for some things. But also, we're a great believer in building relationships through doing rather than just through talking. So if there's a way that we can do a transaction with somebody, and it might be not quite perfect, but let's see how we get together, because actually the relationships that are built mean that you can go on and do more things, and you can shape and improve and adjust, and that's where I think it's really powerful. But you do need people to come with you on the journey, and for you to go on other people's journey as well. So, you know, we all have to share that responsibility together.
Yeah, I just want to sort of bounce off what you were saying there. That the nice thing about ethics, for instance, I said we amplify investment opportunities, but there is often something for everybody on there. So at the moment, I think we've got 6 projects at the moment covering renewable energy, some covering housing, some covering responsible finance lending, all that sort of stuff. You mentioned earlier, you know, this is about local people getting involved in initiatives local to them. That's entirely possible too. You know, so if you happen to be living in Cornwall, then you can invest in Mustard Seed, or if you happen to be living in rural Wiltshire, then you can invest in Stockwood. You can invest in Stockwood as well. So Worcestershire, sorry. I knew I was getting the wrong place, but thanks. Equally, you know, you can have, as well as being a local geography community, you can have a community of interest as well. And if you happen to be based in the north of Scotland, but really love, you know, supporting vulnerable adults, you can also make that investment, particularly if you've got a bunch load of money in your bank account not really doing much. It's a great opportunity to invest in something that you may be passionate about, but you just don't happen to have that local by geography investment opportunity near to you.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Sebastian, but we've seen the Mustard Seed properties, it's now about 50-50 of people who have either a local postcode that they register. We've only got a very small number of second homeowners, but we want to be both a solution to the affordable housing challenge that is made worse by second home ownership, but also actually it's Cornwall's a beautiful place to be, and we love people to become for whatever reason, but also be part of the solution. So we've got a few second home owners that invest, and they tend to write bigger checks. And one of the stories was, well, I thought, actually, why should I replace my kitchen this year when I can help somebody else get an access to a house? And I was like, yeah, fantastic. What a great way of sharing that. But yeah, being friends with a place or friends with a cause, I think is as meaningful and feeling connected to it as well. It's really important.
We've got about a third of our members are very local, and we've got members in Australia and America and Europe as well. About half our members are averagely investing around £5,000, and about half are averagely investing about £200. So absolutely, there are a lot of people who are involved because they want to be part of this, and there's also people involved because they need to make money from it. And they, after 4 or 5 years, they have done every single year, and so it's getting easier for people to understand this as an investment opportunity.
No, that's great. I really want to open it up to questions. I mean, I think you guys are doing such incredible work, and I just want to hear what people in the audience are thinking. Oh, no, this won't work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well.
There we go. Oh, look at that.
I've just come from Grace Blakely's session over there, and it seems to me that what you're doing is quite urgent. That
yeah,
it
I
spreads
to...
and the time is right for it to be happening from what she said. So thank you very much for what you're offering and what you're doing. A lot of people don't know that it's been going on for this length of time either, and thank God it has. I'm really interested because of the work I'm doing in a small charity which has really been struggling and is looking for an inspiring way forward. So thank you.
I don't know if that's
a question, but... Oh.
No, it's good, because I was at that lecture, I was at that show too with Grace, and somebody asked her, I'm an accountant, what should I put my money in? And Grace refused to answer. I wanted to grab the microphone.
Invest in Stockwood.
Yeah, check. Join FX.
Sorry, I can't remember you. I've got questions for you about the life of your cows, the day in the life of your cow. What does it look like? Sebastian. So what is a day in the life of a cow where on your farm? Why don't you have pigs? And how do you replicate what you're doing elsewhere? Are you becoming a consultant so you go out and do it elsewhere? That's my question for you. But the gentleman next door, what are your credentials? Who are you? Where do you come from? Why are you sitting there? And why have you launched Ethics? I'm very sceptical about financial people.
Great. Okay, so we'll start. Sebastian, a day in the life of the cows. And then, Tom, who are you?
So on a biodynamic farm, there's a sort of deep understanding of the importance of the cow in the fertility cycle of the farm. And the farm is seen as an organism, as a whole unit, and the life of the soil is the fundamental bringer of nutrition and life to all of us, the microbiology of the soil. So the cows are incredibly important because they actually push that virtuous cycle of fertility building forward. The life of a stockwood cow is very, very comfortable. They are very, they're Herefords, English Herefords. They're very calm. They're hefted. So it's multiple generations since the cows have been brought into the farm. It's a peaceful life. If you look on stockwoodcbs.org, you can see pictures of the cows, and also you can connect to the blog. You asked about how we're going to replicate as well, and why don't we do pigs? Well, we could do much more, but my parents are in their late 70s. And there's a question about when so much time is involved in dealing with the bureaucracy of Natural England and higher level stewardship, how much energy there is for innovation. But in the future, especially with the education project, we hope there will be a horticultural section which will have quite a lot of small animal farming, as learning on the land is more effective when there's small animals, so goats, chickens, pigs, things like that. So it's really a question about the people who are doing it and how much complexity they want in their lives. That's the answer regarding the pigs. And regarding how we replicate and whether I work as a consultant, I do to a certain extent. The most important thing for any project is there's a group of people who want it to happen. And I hope that, you know, Daniel and Resonance and Stockwood can work together to make it much easier for a group of people to deliver. So we've blended commercial property income to make Stockwood work, but there's other sources of income, and we've also brought in renewable energy. But there are other potential sources, for instance, housing and other commercial opportunities. And the opportunity doesn't necessarily have to be on the farm. So we could be investing in a village or a town and in a farm on the outskirts. And the intention is that that farm becomes a hub for organic farms in the area, potentially with processing. And we would quite like to create a brand so that when this is a local operation, there's national recognition for what's being done. Because in this country, the reality is London is incredibly important, and we consume national media more or less all the time. It means if I get into the Birmingham Post, it doesn't really make a difference to my life, but if I get into the Guardian, it makes a huge difference. So how can we be national and local is one of our big challenges. So I could write a book on the question you've asked there, but I'll stop at that point if that's all right. Bad luck, Tom.
Yeah. who am I? Okay, so give you a very brief story. I'm just a lad who grew up in St. Albans, just north of London. I went to uni in Bristol. And when I graduated, it was the end of the financial crisis. And I'd been studying economics. And the traditional thing for economics students to do is to go and work in financial services. So that wasn't particularly an option at that time. So instead, I ended up putting peas on plates as they came past me on a conveyor belt in a food factory for about 2 years, just whilst that sector was sorting itself out. And whilst I was doing that work, I became really interested in food systems because of the amount of food this factory was throwing away. It's about a skip's worth of food every day that was being thrown out of this factory, which I found appalling for all the reasons that we'll probably have heard about. And so I did a bit of research and looking into this, and ended up coming across a master's course that I earned a load of money putting peas on plates to afford to do that. And came across a guy called Tim Lang, who I think Sebastian knows quite well. He's a professor of food policy. I did that master's course. And when you meet Tim, Tim's a lovely bloke, but he doesn't like to talk himself about himself a fair bit. And he's always like, well, when I sat on the board of this thing and when I set up that thing, he was talking about, when I co-founded Sustain, and I went and found out about Sustain and volunteered for them for a while. And Sustain are a huge, what do they call them? So the Alliance for Better Food and Farming. So they are a, sort of an alliance of organisations that promote better food. And I volunteered on a programme of theirs and then got a job there on a programme called Capital Growth. And Capital Growth makes it sound like it was a money programme, but the joke of it is that we were setting up food growing spaces in London. So, yeah, the brilliant pun there, yes. So we set up 2,000 food growing spaces. I did that project. I then moved to another charitable environmental organisation called Groundwork, which is a big, does lots of work in improving green spaces for often quite deprived communities around the UK. And I was managing and developing projects there, and I moved on to the Plunkett Foundation, which does a lot of work in developing co-ops, and I was a development manager there, where I was developing some quite large national strategic programs to improve food and farming systems, rural development, all that sort of stuff. And both these guys have mentioned the Community Benefit Society is a form of co-op. Well, there's a sort of Plunkett Foundation was doing a lot of work with, or does do a lot of work with, cooperatives and community benefit societies doing share raises, and that was my transition into ethics, where I could take a bit of that knowledge. So the short answer is I know bugger all about finance. I don't know anything about it at all, but I don't know if it gives you any extra confidence on whether or not you should be investing via the ethics platform. Hopefully that explains something.
I think that's the question though, right, isn't it? Is how can we trust ethics, right? Why should I sign up? Why should I put my money there?
When I started the Stockwood project, I was taken by the hand through what's known as due diligence. I'd never heard of this before, but Daniel says, you've got to do due diligence, Sebastian. That means I'm going to introduce you to a number of different people and you're going to explain what you're trying to do. And they're going to try and find out the flaws in your vision. And if you actually get through this due diligence process, then they will probably invest. And I went through due diligence with Jamie and ethics as my first experience of that. So ethics is looking at the projects in depth, in detail, before they put you on their platform. And they want to know all about your values, what you're trying to do, and who you are and where you come from before you even get onto their platform.
Yeah,
so
great.
The other thing, okay. Just say about ethics, again, because when Sebastian was being due diligence by ethics, actually we also did some due diligence, if you like, or we did a beauty parade with other platforms, so we went to see a few. But ethics is stand out on two key points for me. So not only is all that they do and only the things that they do are focused around positive investing, so it's not a thing on the side that they're just exploring for now, it's absolutely everything. They're a social enterprise themselves, so they're a company limited by guarantee. They've got no shareholders. They've got some lenders, some investors in them. But actually, all of the profits that they make will be sewed back into building their platform. And the other thing is their price. They charge 2% to raise capital, whereas a number of other crowdfunders were charging quite a lot more. So the profit extraction from the transaction was kept low, which is good for the social enterprise, it's good for the investor, and it's good for building the community. What it does require is a much larger community of people to be joining in order for that to be more sustainable. So yeah, if you can get away with charging 5%, well, you know, it's suddenly earning 3 to 5% on an investment when the first 5% disappears out is quite hard to justify. You have to do it for a longer period of time. So trying to make it work when we're also trying to build a market, build a sector, build a movement is the challenge, which is why we're here and why if there's one thing that I would encourage you all to do with no financial interest in ethics at all, it would be go to the ethics website, become a member, consider what you might do with £100 or £100,000. Stockwood and Mustard Seed Property, when we've got our live offers, will be on there. But there are a whole load of other things. And the key is that you invest in something that is aligned with your values.
Great. I've got three questions. I'm going to go here and then come around.
Thanks. My name's Cliff Mills from Anthony Collins. If you don't trust people in finance, you probably don't trust lawyers either. But we wrote the rules that the Plunkett Foundation use, and we do the work for Co-ops UK, so maybe that helps. So this is a question for Sebastian. You started off saying that farming is an insular business, and from what one reads, you know, it's incredibly stressful and horrible statistics about the numbers of people coming out of it and ghastly things like suicide rates. And it's kind of seems like the business model is almost broken. But what you're doing is a completely different business model, because you're not trading simply to maximise income. You're trading for the benefit of the community. And you're not just a farming family. You are a community that owns through a community benefit society. So not only are you using a little different legal widget, you're also a completely different business model. And my question is, do you think that that is a realistic business model on a wider scale? And what does the rest of the farming community think about you?
I emphatically think that this is the path to go. The Stockwood isn't the best example. The best example is Tablehurst Farm in Sussex. So 800 acres, a turnover of £1 million, and I think there's 20 full-time employment, or it might be 40 people working there, equivalent to 20 full-time. If that 800 acres was farmed intensively using the standard model, it would give one family an income of around 40,000. So can you see how much more wealth is being generated for the community by farming in a diversified way? Now, if you take the educational program that Stockwood is looking to develop and add a few other sundry enterprises to Stockwood, you end up at Tablehurst. So we're on the journey to that. Absolutely. If this was how we managed our land for the benefit of the community, we would not only have better food, we would have more employment and more well-being. It's all about choosing what outcome you want and then going for that. Was there another aspect to that question?
Yeah, what does the rest of the farming community think?
Obviously, the place to find that out is in the pub. So when we started farming, we overheard people talking about the eccentrics, about the peculiar people who had taken over. And after a few years, what we heard people talking about was why our grass was surviving the drought, why our animals were so healthy, why we had less TB than other farms near us. So what we have to do is be visible. And if we're visible, and also not afraid to have people come on our land and walk across it, and not afraid to receive their challenges, because they can see with their eyes that what we're doing works. It's just a question of time. And individual who wrote a book called Blink and a book called Tipping Point, he sort of points to the way, the challenge that we have, that we don't have to convince everybody. We have to convince a certain number of people, and then we reach a tipping point and the thing starts to move.
That's right. No, great. Okay.
I might just come in on that farming question very briefly. In another hat, I work for an organisation called the Real Farming Trust, which is also based in Oxford. If you live in Oxford for the last 80 years, around January time, you'll see a very odd sight, which is hundreds of people wandering around the streets of Oxford in tweed suits. And these are conventional farmers who have been going to what's called the Oxford Farming Conference. And this is the NFU, the National Farmers Union, I don't know how to describe it, a showpiece sort of event each year to uphold the current conventional farming system. About 10 years ago, the Real Farming Trust was set up and hosted what I might say is almost the two fingers to the Oxford Farming Conference, which is the Oxford Real Farming Conference. That first conference was had about 50 people in a pokey little room in one of the Oxford colleges, and some guy struggling with a projector and all this sort of stuff. 10 years down the line, it now runs over 2 days, has 1,200 people attending it, and is the sort of the place that I love to go to at the start. So almost an Edinburgh fringe. Yeah, it's fascinating saying of the other conference. It's now more popular than the Oxford Farming Conference. So in answer slightly to that question, agroecology is becoming incredibly popular. It's going to dominate the farming system in the future.
Hi, I just wanted to pick up that question about ethics and how can you trust investment opportunities and so on, because a couple of years ago I led a community share offer for Friends of the Earth Birmingham Limited. We're a very odd Friends of the Earth group in that we're a community benefit society and we own a building, or rather a suite of buildings. We raised £250,000 to refurbish them, and although I'd helped to draft the prospectus, I didn't take on the delivery of the project really until the day that the offer closed. And my predecessor as general manager, I was the secretary all along, I still am the secretary, previous general manager had done a deal with a well-known crowdfunding platform, which is probably the one you think of when you hear the words crowd and funding together, who charged us 6%. And the reason I had a bad feeling about that all the way along, and I kind of bit my tongue because I didn't think I should interfere in somebody else's job, and we went along with it because we thought that because we were a community of interest rather than a community of location, if you're buying a village shop, you can knock on the door of everybody who lives in the village and get them to say yay or nay. But when you're appealing to people who are concerned about the global environment, who are concerned about food, about cycling, about all the different things that we do in the building, we thought that having some kind of wider platform would be helpful. I don't think we got a single investor because we were on that platform and they charged us an arm and a leg. In hindsight, I wish we'd just put the offer on our own website and not paid anybody a penny, which is what Stretford Public Hall in Manchester did very successfully. But that's with the benefit of hindsight. If I'd known that we could have done it with FX at 2%, I would have bitten your hands off. And in terms of trust, I think as an investor, all FX or any platform can do is act as a matchmaking service. As an investor, it's your responsibility to find out about the project and decide whether you're prepared to risk your money with them. In our case, we got the Co-ops UK Community Share Standard Mark. That was an extremely painful process, of which I am partly rather critical. However, it did force us to do a massive amount of additional work, which may or may not have made it a better offer.
I've got a quick example here of an investment prospectus. This is an atypical thing that you should read before making an investment. And there is one of these for each and every single investment on the FX website and any investment website as well. You should definitely be reading these, because these should, in theory, contain all the information that you need to make a sensible investment opportunity.
That's great. I've got two questions. I'll take a third. We go quick.
Hi there. I'm a city councillor in Chelmsford. We have quite a lot of money that we look to invest. And I'm wondering, you've been talking about individuals getting involved in investments in local communities, whether there's been any approach to local governments to invest in such things.
I won't hog the mic, but yes, on FX, we have a number of... So it's not just individuals, there are institutions who invest via FX. A particular good example is Leeds Community Homes, a community land trust in Leeds that is doing a housing project, and Leeds City Council made a £10,000 investment in community shares into that project. I'm sure you've got other examples as well, Daniel.
So Cornwall Council Chief Exec Kate Canelli, when I was telling her about Mustard Seed Property, and even though she's got a need to mobilise £40 million into homelessness, and she could only invest £100,000 into Mustard Seed Property, so I could get 3.5%. Well, that's what I need from this, so why don't I do that? Now, they haven't done it yet. But actually, Cornwall Council has been quite good at investing, typically as a facilitator or bridge lender to help
community-led organisations develop. Again, with my resonance hat on, the 200 million odd that we manage of other people's money, most of that, so about just over half of that, is from local authorities. So we use capital from Croydon, Westminster, I think it's Enfield, Oxford, Bristol, Milton Keynes, all who've put money into our homelessness property fund, which, okay, is operating at a much, much bigger scale than some of this community stuff. But we are able to buy 4 properties a week to make them available to a homeless charity called St Mungo's, who then allow local authorities who have got families stuck in temporary accommodation to release that burden, both financial and social, on them. So that there are some pretty well-trodden paths, and I, for sure, love to chat to you about how that can work and is working. Whether it's using Public Works, Loan Board or Treasury, because local authorities have different types of capital. But people are increasingly doing that, and it works exceptionally well as a match. So it's unlocked quite a lot of private money from foundations and individuals. So, of course, then the local authority money is going a lot further. And also building some confidence that if the council's behind it, then actually there'll be some commitment and follow through. So it's a really powerful tool, and I would encourage you to keep asking that question.
I just wanted to go back to the rest of the farming community on a couple of things and ask. I'm a customer of Riverford Organic Farms, who've just recently passed it over to their employees. And I think it's Guy Watson who runs it, has been talking to Davos, I think, recently, according to his weekly blog. And he's been in The Guardian as well, I think. So I don't know if there's a link there. And there was something else, but it's escaped my mind, I think. But no, it's gone. But anyway, I just wondered if... Oh, I suppose I'm a fan of Countryfile and... That they're talking about some of these issues. Oh, I know what the other thing was I was reading about the new president of the National Union of Farmers, who sounds pretty open to all sorts of ideas currently that's challenging the sort of establishment of the farming community currently. So a response to those issues.
Yeah, I was interviewed by John Craven. I think we need a few more Stockwoods happening before Countryfile actually puts us as an idea before the nation. And the National Farming Union is an awkward organisation with conflicted priorities. But, you know, if there's somebody good leading it, that's fantastic.
Great. Okay, here's the thing. We're going to take one more question, and then we're going to give you 4 ways that you can leave here and participate, okay?
Yeah, actually, it rather follows on from Riverford Organic. I'm a huge fan, and I'm very, very concerned about the whole issue of glyphosate. So I hope this isn't too sort of off kilter, but glyphosate is a sort of generic word for the pesticides that are used by Roundup, for example. And I think it's a huge issue. But I was just wondering how that impacts on your thinking. If at all, and on this question of ethics and investment in farming. But Sebastian, I'd love to hear your thinking about it, please.
Well, I obviously hugely against industrial chemicals destroying the microbiology, upon which we all depend, the total environmental disaster. So Stockwood is roughly a third people are interested in organic farming, a third are interested in biodynamic farming, and a third are interested in ethical investment. That's the sort of like groupings for Stockwood. So yes, huge amount of interest in biodynamic and organic, which both absolutely get rid of the industrial environmental disaster of chemical farming.
And just quickly, in terms of investment, Ethics itself is an ethical investment platform, so we will only list businesses that are doing good stuff, in that good includes organic farming. So, yeah.
Okay, so I just said 4 ways you can get involved. So first of all, Sebastian, you've got leaflets on Stockwood. People can become a member. They're at the resident stand. Okay, the top of the resident stand there. Okay, so you can join up. You can become a member, join their newsletter. Everyone here?
You can join direct on our website, and when we're running share offers, you can join through ethics.
Great, and that's it. And everyone can sign up for Ethex. You can sign up as an individual to invest, or if you're looking for investment.
Yes, absolutely. There's a bunch of these flyers just to remind you. So do go over and take one, and then sign up just to be an Ethex user. You don't have to make an investment, but just it's always good to sign up, and then you can be updated when both Mustard Seed and Stockwood become listed on the platform as well. So take one of these.
Great. And that's personal, but also if you know a social business looking for investment, send them to Ethex or to Resonance, right? Like that's a third way you can get involved. You hear about a business that's doing good, send them this way. And then they can sign up to be part of Resonance, yeah? To the newsletter.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got a simple sign up. I know some of you have done it already. So if you just want to be kept in touch with some of the projects where Resonance are involved, and we're either investing or arranging those investments, all about trying to mobilise useful capital into the hands of social enterprises. So, yes, last year we mobilised 33 million into the hands of 33 different social enterprises. Nice, neatly, a million to each. No, so that ranged from 10 grand through to just over 20 million. So some of these are tiny little projects, and we've got some examples of the deals that we've done just to get help people understand the reality that actually there are an increasing number of social enterprises, something like 100,000 social enterprises contributing to, I think it's 3% of the GDP, which actually is equivalent to farming in its entirety as well. So actually the social enterprise movement is, it's here to stay and growing and are great users and putting to use of capital. Do get involved if you can.
Great. Thank you guys for coming. Do come see us at the Resonance stand.
Thank you for listening to Great Thinking, Ideas and Conversations from Greenbelt. At Greenbelt, we make a space where artistry meets activism, where the political meets the practical, where the sacred meets the secular. We think we're somewhere to dream up a better world, to dance and debate, to pray and to party. Visit greenbelt.org.uk to browse and download other great thinking from our recorded catalogue. We're Greenbelt. We're somewhere to believe in.